So how did that happen? How did you end up here at the ICTR?
You will be surprised. My name was not on the list of lawyers because I didn't know the procedure at that time. But after that case in Cameroon, I came over here and I said, look, I heard that subsequently, I heard that the court had been constituted. And I said, look, let me have this experience because this may well happen to us at some point in time, as long as our problems subsist and as long as the momentum is building, it could lead to this. So let me come. So I came to Arusha, and when I came here, I met one of the secretaries, and I said, look, I want to know how to one can become a lawyer here in these proceedings. So she gave me some forms, filled these forms, and I filled them, and somebody signed, and my name was put on the list. And I left here and went to Washington. And I was in Washington for about 3 months. And one day I got information from Cameroon that they were looking for me in Arusha, and that I'd been called upon to come quickly to be co-counsel for one of the accused persons. And when I came here, I didn't know anybody here in Tanzania, apart from the short stay here. And it was very, very exciting. And I met the accused, and I discovered that the accused was a former mayor. He was no longer in command, he had no position, and he was not as literate as the others would be. And I started working for him. And sometimes in February, there was an interlocutory appeal that had been filed, challenging his arrest and detention, because the defense at the time felt that the arrest and detention were illegal. There was no warrant, and when they obtained a warrant for another person, they used that warrant to arrest him, and he was brought here. So the lead counsel withdrew from the case, and the appeal chambers had indicated that they were going to come here 2 weeks thereafter to hear the interlocutory appeal. And they wrote to me and said, well, you have to be prepared. We're coming. We cannot postpone the session, so you should prepare for the interlocutory appeal. So I went on reading the transcripts and preparing the briefs, and when I did the arguments, it was good. One of the judges, Judge Abudin, was very impressed. Of course, on the other side, I had the prosecutor with 7 prosecutors, Khaled Aponte herself. And the advantage I had is that all the 7 of them decided to argue the appeal, and I found a lot of contradictions. It was easy. When the other person got up, he contradicted the other person, and that was the situation. And at the end, the remedies I was seeking, that he should be set free, we didn't get that. But we had it midway, that we'll let the trial proceed. If he's convicted, you should take into consideration the arrest, the illegal arrest and detention, and that should affect in the sentencing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think at the end of the day, that we benefited from that.
So when you first came to the tribunal, yeah, and you wanted to participate here as a lawyer, yeah, did you clearly say, I want to participate on the side of the defense, or were you open to being both a prosecutor on the prosecution side and the defense? What was your thinking?
My thinking was to be on the side of the defense, and the reason is very, very clear. I already knew that there was some politics involved in the court. But the mere fact that the UN was present in Rwanda and did nothing. And I knew that if the very UN should constitute a court to try the alleged perpetrators, they would try to hide their role or the role of the UN officers who were in the field. I already knew and or suspected this. And therefore, I told myself, I went on the side of the prosecutor, I'll be complicit in this. Let me be there, so that I can have the opportunity to see through this case and see all the complexity of this case, see all the politics about the case. So in case that it happens again, I'll be in the position from that early period to be able to take part in trying to point out the politics of that. It is this suspicion of the political intrigues that might have informed the creation of the court, especially from the standpoint of the UN. And my suspicions were proved right thereafter, because the UN, from inception, from the Security Council, from the Secretary General report, that characterized the conflict as an internal arms conflict. But you know, this is a major component of war crimes. The evidence now points otherwise. It points that Uganda was involved. It points even to the mere presence of the UN itself and some of its officials. Now, which clearly shows that they were trying to conceal, to preempt any attempt to litigate the role of the UN and that of some of the neighboring countries and some of the superpowers that were complicit in one way or other, either by commission or omission, to the crime that took place in Rwanda. So my suspicions were right from that, although I didn't have the picture as this, but as the evidence has unfolded, and people will now feel more comfortable to testify, here is. But the court cannot make findings because their hands are tied. The Security Council, in creating the court, the Security General report only said it was an internal arms conflict. And of course, ordinarily, an independent court will be in the position to disagree with the Security Council that, in spite of your position that it's an internal arms conflict, the evidence points otherwise. Of course, that's another issue. It all depends if the judges themselves, who are United Nations appointees, Security Council appointees from different member states, if they are bold enough to go that far, that's another issue. But my suspicions, exceptionally, have been proved right.